Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona. Friday, February 17. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here with you, and we cover the week's activity on Wall Street and in the agricultural community every week. We look forward to your company, and we thank you very much for joining us. We always begin by taking a look at Wall Street, and who knows what's going to happen on Wall Street these days besides constant record setting. As we look at today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average barely made it, but it did hit a seventh straight record high. And the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ also closed at a record, thanks to gains in Kraft Heinz that helped offset some selling in energy stocks. But after suffering losses for most of the session, the Dow and the S&P 500 turned positive in the final minutes of a week that has been fueled by what's being called the Trump rally that has seen the stock market surge since the presidential election in November. Kraft Heinz up 10% after it said it would continue to pursue a $143 billion bid for Unilever, despite being rebuffed by the company. Unilever's U.S. listed shares gained 14% for the day. And as we look at today's activity, 8 of the 11 major S&P sectors moved higher, with consumer staples adding 0.2%, again thanks to the Kraft Heinz story, and Colgate-Palmolive a 4% increase, and Kimberly-Clark showing a 4% increase as well. Signs of a strengthening economy as well as anticipated tax cuts behind the most recent optimism. And with a strong fourth quarter earnings season mostly complete, many investors say they need some concrete signs of progress now from Trump on his policy plans, because uncertainty around other potential Trump policies is an additional risk. One analyst, Lindsay Bell at CFRA Research, said people are focusing on only the good of what his campaign promises were. What makes me nervous is that it feels like the market is ignoring what could come on immigration, trade, health care, the negative implications that could come from a protectionist government. So what about the week on Wall Street? The Dow up 1.7%, the S&P 500 added 1.5%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.8%. And the S&P 500 posted 46 new 52-week highs and one new low with a composite, the NASDAQ recording 141 new highs and 24 new lows. So setting record high closes this week at least has become an almost daily practice on Wall Street. Earnings reports coming in perhaps better than some people expected, but there are also some other signs in the economy showing strength. For example, home building fell in January as the construction of multifamily housing projects dropped, but upward revisions to the previous month's data and a jump in permits to a one-year high suggested the housing recovery remained on track. Other reports that came in this week, a fairly upbeat assessment of the economy early in the first quarter, factory activity in the Mid-Atlantic region to a 33-year high in February, and the number of new applications for unemployment benefits less than expected last week. An analyst, Joel Noroff, said, "Not much to complain about the economy as housing and manufacturing are improving and the labor market remains tight." Housing starts fell 2.6% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1,250,000 units last month, according to the Commerce Department. And that drop in home building also may have resulted from the unusually wet weather in California. Man, we haven't talked about wet weather in California for a decade, it seems like, but I'll talk about that a little bit later in this report. December starts were revised up to a rate of 1,280,000 units, up slightly from the previous month. And compared to January of 2016, home building was up 10.5% in 1 year. Permits for future construction jumped 4.6% in January to the highest level since November of 2015, and building permits in the South, where most home building occurs, hit their highest level since July of 2007. And then take a look at the stocks of the home builders. Shares in the nation's largest home builder, D.R. Horton, little change for the week. Lenner Corporation down 0.25%. Pulte down 0.18%. In another report this week, the Philadelphia Federal Reserve Bank said its general activity index jumped to 43.3 this month. That's the highest reading since January of 1984. Manufacturers in the Mid-Atlantic region reported a surge in new orders and shipments. Factories also extended working hours for employees this month. And the Philadelphia Fed's data mirrored other regional surveys in suggesting a broad recovery in manufacturing. And we know how that segment was squeezed by the collapse in oil prices and a strong dollar over the past 2 years. Government report midweek showed the consumer price index increased 2.5% in January. That's the biggest gain since March of 2012. And then in the weekly report on claims for state unemployment benefits, the Labor Department said the new claims rose 5,000 to a seasonally adjusted 239,000 for the week ended February 11. Claims now have been below 300,000, and that's the threshold associated with the strong job market. But the numbers have been below that 300,000 for 102 consecutive weeks, the longest stretch since 1970, when the labor market was much smaller. Going back to the home building report this week, home building last month went up 55% in the northeast region of the country, jumped 20% in the south to the highest level since August of 2007. Housing starts fell 41% in the west to the lowest level since March of 2015. And again, that's because of the flooding rains in California. The single-family home building category, which accounts for the largest share of the residential housing market, climbed 2% to a pace of 823,000 units, while starts for the volatile multifamily housing segment tumbled 10% to a rate of 423,000 units. But all in all, you see the various activities in the economy, and they're holding at a pretty good number. The oil prices ended largely steady today, but lower on the week. U.S. crude notching its first weekly decline in 5 weeks as rising U.S. drilling and record stockpiles continued to face efforts by the major producers who are trying to cut output to reduce the global glut of oil. U.S. energy companies added oil rigs for a fifth straight week. Baker Hughes said, extending a nine-month recovery as drillers take advantage of crude prices that have now held mostly over $50 a barrel since OPEC agreed to cut supplies in late November. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, known as OPEC, and other producers, including Russia, agreed to cut output almost 1.8 million barrels per day during the first half of 2017. Let's go back to the story that made news today, the Kraft Heinz story. U.S. food company Kraft Heinz made, and it was a surprise, a $143 billion offer for Unilever in a bid to build a global consumer goods giant. However, Unilever said, absolutely not, flatly rejected the offer. And so a combination, if it happened, would be the third biggest takeover in history and the largest acquisition of a UK-based company, according to Thomson Reuters data. It would bring together some of the world's best-known brands from toothpaste to ice creams and it would combine Kraft strength in the United States with the strength of Unilever in Europe and Asia. Now, although Kraft, which is controlled by U.S. billionaire Warren Buffett and private equity firm 3G Capital, said it looked forward to talking terms, Unilever said, nah, there's no reason to discuss a deal without financial or strategic merit. Don't have all the details, but in its offer, Kraft sought to provide assurances over maintaining its culture of innovation, recognizing it requires investment, and acknowledge there are limits to cutting costs, according to a source familiar with the bid. So it'll be interesting to watch this one to see if it has a chance of making it because of the size, because of the countries involved, and because, again, of antitrust concerns. Finally, while we're on the subject of food, earnings report today from Campbell Soup Company said we're not eating as much soup as we have been. Lower than expected quarterly sales in the last quarter, hurt by weak demand for its V8 beverages, its broth and condensed soups, and that sent its shares down 8% when the market started trading this morning. The fall was Campbell's biggest intraday percentage loss in more than 8 years, after the world's largest soup maker also said it did not expect sales to rise in its C Fresh unit, which sells carrots and beverages, in fiscal 2017. And then talk about job creation in this country. Accenture today said it would create 15,000 highly skilled new jobs in the United States as IT services firms brace for a more protectionist U.S. technology visa program under President Trump. The company, which is domiciled in Dublin, Ireland, said the new jobs would increase the company's U.S. workforce by 30% to more than 65,000 by the end of 2020. Accenture has more than 394,000 employees, of which about 140,000 are in India. Well, we're going to talk agriculture, of course, and this time of the year here in North America, you can't do a market report for agriculture without talking about South America. So in a moment or so, we're going to turn to the man who, in my opinion, knows more about South American crop production and conditions than anybody else that I know, Dr. Michael Cordonier of soybeansandcorn.com. We'll check in with the doctor when we continue here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
It's always a pleasure to sit down with Dr. Michael Cordonier of soybeansandcorn.com to catch up on South America, because you have been there a great deal in your life, have you not?
Yes, so we just came back about 2 weeks ago after traveling through Brazil for a couple of weeks.
And you were there for the trucker strike?
Yeah, we was right there during the trucker strike, which meant that there was a lot of trucks parked along the side of the highways, but not as many on the road. So it made traveling, you know, a little bit easier.
From north to south in the country of Brazil, what are the well-known provinces that we keep an eye on for soybean harvest?
Well, you have to watch Mato Grosso. Mato Grosso is the number one state in Brazil for both soybeans and corn. They have about 27% of all the soybeans and about 35% of the corn production. So Mato Grosso is the equivalent of Iowa, Illinois, and half of Indiana. So that's how much soybeans they produce. So they're huge. So you have to watch Mato Grosso.
And are they the closest to the equator?
Yes. Okay. The middle part of Mato Grosso is about 13, 14 degrees south of the equator, about the same latitude as Panama is north of the equator.
Okay.
Now, the second state is Paraná, and Paraná is further south. So those two states combined have roughly just short of half of Brazil's production.
Let's talk about harvest progress, because while we're resting, they're working.
Yes. Brazil right now is about 25, maybe 28% harvested. About average. They got a lot of harvesting done the first part of January. Then it got very wet. Mato Grosso, while we were there, we was there for like 2 weeks. It rained every day except one. So didn't have a chance to see a single combine in the field because it was too wet. It has dried out somewhat since then. So they're making progress between the showers. And there was some concern, you know, if more wet weather comes in, you might have some quality concerns, that sort of thing. But for the time being, they're getting by.
And then let's look at Argentina, because I was telling you, somebody sent me some photographs of Argentine land. I didn't realize Argentina is totally flat.
It's as flat as a pool table.
Yeah.
So when they get a couple inches of rain, it just sets there. And unfortunately, right around Christmas, they got a lot of rain in the central part of the country, in provinces of Santa Fe, Entre Rios, northern Buenos Aires. And then they got some more around New Year's Day. But that has now drained away. So it did take out maybe 400,000 or 500,000 hectares of cropland. But always with flooding situation, you get floods, you know, eliminating some acres, but the other areas that weren't flooded had good moisture, so the crops are doing very good. So actually, I've been increasing my Argentine estimates as of late. And as always, you know, get your fingers crossed, they don't get more rain, because then there would, you know, be more problems.
So let's talk about your estimates for Brazil and Argentina. Bigger crops?
Yes. Right now, I'm 105 million tons for Brazil soybeans. Last year, they did 95 million, so it was like 10 million tons more. It's going to be a record crop, without a doubt. And they're not quite in the bin in Brazil, but they're pretty close. So I don't see any major problems anymore for Brazil, unless it just gets super wet here for the next couple of weeks. Argentina, it's going to be a smaller crop than last year. Last year, they did 56 million tons of soybeans. I have them at 54 million right now. So it's going to be down from last year. But the increase in Brazil is going to compensate for the losses in Argentina. So South America combined is going to have another record crop of soybeans.
China still buying a lot of South American beans?
Yes. The lineup for vessels is still very long. But we have a little bit of a window here for U.S. exports, because the rain has slowed down the harvest a bit in Brazil. So we're exporting a little bit more and a little bit longer than what we thought.
Let's go beyond grains and soybeans, and let's talk about meat, for example, because South America is becoming a major competitor there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, Mexico sent a team of veterinarians to Brazil to certify meatpacking plants for both beef, pork, and poultry, because they want to start importing meat from Brazil. And Brazil's huge in meat exports, you know, huge. Same thing with Russia. Russia's got phytosanitary people in Brazil right now certifying plants and all that sort of thing. So the meat industry in Brazil had a couple of tough years because they had a shortage of corn. So last year, corn hit record prices. There was times last June you couldn't buy corn in Brazil at any price. No matter what you offered, it just wasn't available. Those days are past. They're harvesting the full-season corn now. They've got a big second crop of corn coming on. Corn prices have really, really gone down, which is good for the meat industry. So the meat industry is taking advantage, and they're ramping up their production.
And I would guess they're looking at the possible problems between the U.S. with the new administration and some of our current buyers.
Yes. Both Brazil and Argentina view the U.S. sort of pulling out of TPP, reluctance with NAFTA, as an opportunity for them to step in. No, United States, Brazil, and Argentina, we sell the same products to the same countries. So when one pulls back a little bit, it opens the door for the other ones.
So trade can be a problem for us if we continue to do what we're doing with agreements, you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big world out there. Mexico and the Asian countries don't have to buy from the United States. They can buy some of the products from other countries as well.
Are you making any guesstimates on the U.S. crops this year?
Well, there's a lot of speculation on acreage. I think the soybean area is going to go up maybe 3 or 4 million acres. Corn go down maybe 3 million. But there's still a lot of doubt. And I don't think the corn area goes down as much as what we thought a couple of months ago. Corn prices are like $4 a bushel.
Right.
And that's sort of a psychological point for farmers. So if they keep strengthening a little bit, I think beans will go up, corn will go down, but maybe not as much as what we anticipated. And, of course, we get the outlook meeting from USDA, then the planting intentions in the March. And then all that focuses into the weather. If you have a nice, open, dry spring, that always favors corn acres. So I think there's still some doubt about the acreage.
Where can people get in touch with you to carry on conversations or get information?
You can always go to soybeansandcorn.com. That's my website. I put a lot of stories there. Then you can also send me an email at soycorn@comcast.net. And always glad to answer your questions.
And you will do that because I know when we get in touch with you, we do hear back from you.
I try to answer questions as quickly as possible. I spend a lot of my day answering questions.
When will your next trip to South America take place? Have you decided?
Well, it won't be until the fall or maybe, right, you know, November, December. We were there looking at the soybean harvest. Unfortunately, it rained all the time. And the safrinha corn planting. So the next big thing in Brazil, in fact, most of my questions right now is about the Brazilian corn crop, more so than a Brazilian soybean crop. Right now, they're planting the safrinha corn. It's maybe 25% planted. The ideal planting window is going to close here towards the end of February. So the question is, will they get it planted on time? How big will it be? No one knows, of course. It's going to depend on the weather during March, April, and May. And right now, the forecast, long-range forecast, is not very good. They're calling for hot and dry weather during March, April, and May. So we'll see.
So the harvest of the second crop corn gets underway when?
They start in June. It probably peaks in July and August. And then it's that second crop that goes into the export channels. The first crop of corn was like one-third of the total corn in Brazil. That all goes to the livestock industry.
Right.
None of that goes to export. So all the export corn comes on the market June, July, and August. And then they started exporting about August and peaks September, October, November. And that's when they go into the export market with corn.
I can remember the days we didn't even talk about Brazil and Argentina for soybeans or corn.
Absolutely. Years ago. We go back a long way, Warren.
Yes, we do.
But starting in the 80s, Brazil came on strong. Argentina's coming on strong. There's plenty of land. They got the weather. They got the know-how. And they just keep getting bigger and bigger.
Well, thank you for joining us. We always look forward to the visit with Dr. Michael Cordonier. Again, that address to reach him, soybeans, plural, soybeansandcorn.com.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
It has been a busy week in the farm equipment industry. The two big shows of the winter season took place this week. The National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Kentucky. Max Armstrong spent a lot of time at that event this week. And then on the other end of the country, the World Ag Expo, celebrating its 50th year in the San Joaquin Valley, headquartered in Tulare, California. Reports are good attendance. Don't have any reports yet on if we were doing more than kicking tires and if we actually did some buying. But it's a show that you can't miss if you're in the agriculture implement or technology business, any of the companies that are serving as inputs for America's farmers and ranchers pretty much have to be at that show in Louisville and the show in Tulare, California. But as we take a look at the ongoing Trump administration and some of its personnel changes, the U.S. Senate confirmed President Trump's pick to run the Environmental Protection Agency today. That happened over the objections of Democrats, and environmentalists certainly didn't like that choice. worried that he will gut the agency as the administration readies executive orders to ease regulation on drillers and miners. But senators voted 52-46 to approve Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt. And only one Republican, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, voted against Pruitt. And two Democrats from energy-producing states, Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, voted for his confirmation. So it'll be interesting to see how far the new president goes with beginning to cut back on regulations that a lot of farmers and ranchers have felt have been heavy-handed, making it even harder to produce the food and the other goods that the world needs. And so reaction from, well, let's look at the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association president, who said the EPA has long been an agency in need of cultural and regulatory reform to ensure it deals with the needs of the people who produce the food and who produce the other elements like ethanol, biodiesel, lumber, and everything else that goes up to make our way. Now, here's probably the biggest farm story of the week. How long has it been since we could say California getting beaten down by heavy rainfall? Well, it was happening again this weekend, as a matter of fact, toward the end of the week, because the California getting beaten up by intense rain, heavy snow, and strong winds. If you had a chance to look at the golf course, the PGA tournament that's on this weekend in California, they had to call it off, at least for a while, because of the weather. And you don't see this headline very long. As a matter of fact, it's been quite a while since I've seen this headline. Sacramento, California could have the biggest rainfall in over a century for the rain season in that part of the state. So now we're concerned about flooding, and we're concerned about too much running off and all of the other activity that goes along with snow and with the rain they have been getting. Let's look at how we ended the week agriculturally in the marketplace. Wheat and corn futures down today for a second straight session as traders liquidated long positions. Again, we're coming up to a holiday weekend. Remember, markets will be closed for President's Day on Monday. So keep that in mind, and we'll be back to a four-day trading week, and then we'll trade full-time until we get to the Easter weekend. But soybeans also extended losses yesterday as we saw falling vegetable oil prices in Asia and an advancing soybean harvest in Brazil. And they're continuing to talk about, as you heard Michael Cordonier say, record high crops in corn and soybeans in Brazil. Moving on to the livestock story. Well, that continues to be an up and down story because live cattle futures today halted a two-day slide, helped by some improved wholesale beef values and better than expected cash prices. And traders said buy stops and technical buying furthered live cattle market advances. The markets will be closed Monday in observance of the President's Day holiday. So we'll start trading on Tuesday, and where will we start with our markets in grains and in livestock? First of all, the grain market on Tuesday will start with March wheat at $4.41 a bushel, March corn at $3.68 and a quarter cents, and March soybeans at $10.32 and a half a bushel when they start trading Tuesday. The livestock trade will start Tuesday with April hogs at $70.77, live cattle at $117.92, and March feeder cattle at $124.07. Whoa, we're out of time. So we'll be back with you again next week. As always, thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. ¶¶